let's jump in. We're in part two. Part two. Last week, you heard from our distinguished guest, who's right here. If y'all want to follow him, I don't know if he has a B-reel.
He does.
He does? Okay, he has a B-reel. I don't know. I don't have his B-reel, though.
He has 1,000 followers.
He's got exactly 1,000. Let's ruin that tonight. Let's add a couple more. And he's following 737 people. It's impressive. Impressive. Okay, so last week, Matt Daniel told us how we're going to be right with God. And we have to start with the background. The background is that God is creator. We have to remember that God is the one who made us. We have to remember that God is not only the one who made us, but he's holy. There's something unique about God, and that he's holy. He's other. You also have to remember that God is just. He doesn't just let us get away with our sin. God must uphold the standard. And then lastly, he talked about God being love. Because of who God is, he allows us a way to be right with him. Now, before we jump into this tonight's sermon, I need to let you know. Okay? You're not going to like this. In fact, this is why it's called the bad news. This is stuff that you don't want to hear, but you desperately need anyway. This is not going to be fun for either one of us. But if you let God speak to you through this sermon, I promise you, it'll be one of the most productive sermons that you could ever hear. It could be useful for you. Let me start by giving you an example here. So you're born in the age of the smartphone. You've never known a life apart from this, and probably most of you guys have one. But did you know, that if you own a smartphone, especially if you're a young person, that there are physical ramifications for using a smartphone all the time. For instance, headaches. You're looking at a screen all day, that causes headaches. In fact, if you look at blue light all day on a screen, you're likely to develop headaches because of the blue light that it emits. Eye strain, which also leads to the headaches. Poor sleep quality, the blue light keeps you awake. It truncates your normal circadian rhythm. And it also blurry vision can also be a thing. Thank you. See? Because I'm looking at screens all day. I can't even tell what it says. But blurry vision could be another one. On top of that, the smartphone also contributes to mental struggles. So tell me if you know about this. Poor academic performance. Now you have an excuse. Mom and Dad, it's because you gave me a smartphone. You might also see social and behavioral issues. You might have difficulty staying focused. Increased anxiety and depression. Now, look, these are looser connections. These are not 100%, although there's really good studies that suggest that these are all related to prolonged social media smartphone usage. And on top of that, you have things like long-term concerns, increased risk of myopia, which is nearsightedness. That's what I had until I got LASIK. I still have that to a degree. Increased risk of childhood obesity. Why? Because you're not doing anything. You're just on your phone all day, or you're on your video games. So there's long-term concerns about using social media, but it gets worse before it gets even any better. On top of that, 61% of obese boys and another percent of obese girls reported watching television for 2 or more hours each day. Now, if you think about television, just think about streaming in general. Television, not the TV, but streaming in general. 12.5% of children and adolescents ages your age have suffered permanent damage to their hearing, because you guys play music too loud. You're listening to music, and then you pump it to number 11. That makes a difference. 84% of 18 to 24-year-olds, so about your age, admit to having back pain from being slumped over their phones, known as eye posture. Some of you guys are slouching right now. I see it. Evidence, and you guys are trying to straighten up. Keep it like that. If you keep it that way the whole night, well, you won't be able to, so I'm not even going to say what.
Challenge.
You can't.
Is that a challenge?
It is a challenge. I dare you. The second I see anyone slouching, then you lose.
Okay. Everybody so loses?
Everybody loses. That works well with the sermon, too. Only 20%, that's 2 out of 10 of you, get the recommended 9 hours of sleep per night because many of you are distracted by your cell phone, your device. Stuff comes up on the phone, you get distracted. It gets worse. We asked a hand surgeon how to treat hand pain from texting. Here's what he told us. There are problems, so I don't know if you've ever noticed this. When you start using your thumb too much, you start noticing repetitive strains. There's a strain on your thumb because of the repetition of your thumb doing the same thing all the time. On top of that, there's also something called smartphone pinky. Have you heard of this? Smartphone pinky is the permanent deformation of your pinky from holding your smartphone up. So mine is deformed because I broke it. Yours might be deformed because you're using your smartphone. So this lady points out what it looks like. When you hold your phone like this over and over and over again every day, you create indents in your finger which may eventually stay there because you're using your smartphone incessantly. Here's another picture of a lady that has it. There's her finger. On the left side is her normal hand. On her right side is her iPhone hand. Do you see a difference? The recommendation for daily screen time, basically, for your age, let's just call it two hours a day. 2 hours a whole day. I don't know if you've shared your screen time lately, but it probably says at least more than 2 hours, I'm guessing. And yet with all of this, bad news. Here's the good news. Here's the good news. All that's bad news, but here's the good news. You can reverse many of these issues by simply using your phone less and using it differently, holding it differently, not holding it so closely. I mean, there's really simple solutions to that really bad news. Makes sense, right? And maybe because of what you just heard, maybe you start holding it differently. Maybe you stop slouching because you now know you're going to start looking like an old woman and an old man before you're even supposed to. You'll never respond to the good news of something until you know the bad news, right? All this smartphone stuff, that's going to be helpful to you, but that's not the big thing. Here's the ultimate bad news that God wants you to hear tonight. Here's what it is. Romans 3:23. We're only going to look at a few verses, and this is our key verse tonight. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That's the bad news. That's the bad news. And in fact, the word that is there, so all have sinned. Think about this. All have sinned. Everybody has sinned. What does the word sin mean? Call out something that you think the word sin means. What is sin? I like that. That's a good one. Anything that's against God. Here's some way that I think is helpful to define. It's almost exactly what you said, Lucas. Sin is any deviation from God's perfect will and character. Any deviation from God's perfect will and his character. So if you think about this, it's not just one aspect. It's not saying God said, hey, don't lie. Okay, so if you lie, that's a sin. But it's any deviation from his character. And his character, as you learned last week, is holy. He's perfect. He's righteous. And anything that is not holy, perfect, and righteous is, by nature, sin. Think about this. You are a sinner individually. It's not just you're a sinner in general. You are a sinner individually. Let me prove it to you here. You are a sinner in two ways. Okay, you're a sinner in two ways. Let me give you both of these really quick. The first way, you are a sinner by birth. You were born into it. In the same way that you are a burner and a Trinidad and a Kelly and a Lowe and an Arce and all those things, Gomez. In the same way that you are those things, you are born into the family of sin. So you could hyphenate your last name. You could say your last name is whatever your last name. Lowe the sinner. Gomez the sinner. Lowe sinner. Low. You're a sinner by birth. Romans chapter 5, you learn about the fact that in Adam, death and sin were transmitted through his line. And because everyone's from the family of Adam, you and I, by nature, are in a realm called sin. You're born into sin, which means you can't escape it. You are, by birth, a sinner. But it gets worse, John. Let me tell you why. Because you're not just a sinner by birth, you're a sinner by choice. You're not just in the family, you're part of the family because you act like the family. You sin by choice. In fact, Romans 3:12 says, all have sinned, all have turned aside, everyone does what they want to do. You guys know what it feels like to say, I'm going to choose to do the wrong thing, even though I know the right thing to do. And the Bible says, this is what demonstrates your sinful condition. You're a sinner by birth and a sinner by choice. Let's just say that together. I am a sinner by birth and by choice. Ready? Here you go. I am a sinner by birth and by choice. That's super important because that means all of us are indicted. The result, because of all this, the result is that you are now alienated from God, which means that you have a broken relationship with him. This is what you see in Isaiah 59, verse 2. Your sins have separated you from God. It says this way, your iniquities have made a separation between you and your God. Your sins have hidden his face from you so that he doesn't hear. Do you hear that? God doesn't hear, chooses not to hear, those who live in rebellion to his leadership and his rule. Remember, you're a sinner in two ways, by birth and by choice. Both of those lead to the fact that you are now separated from God. You might have seen this graphic before. This graphic is a good one. I like it because it demonstrates the fact, God bless you, that if God is here on one side of the chasm, we are on the other side, and there's no way for us to cross that. God bless you. No more. No more blessings. That's it. We are on one side. God's on the other side. There's actually a worship song that we sing that talks about the chasm being far too long. And that's because the chasm here, sin and death, does not allow us simply just to jump over and say, oh, I got you, God. No. Let's start off this sermon by acknowledging something, okay? Here's the thing. Sin is not just a problem for all of us. Sin is a problem for you. Sin is a problem for me. Sin is an individual issue. So let's start with this point number one here. I need you to agree that you sin against God. Last week, we talked about who God is. This week, we talk about why it's important that we know who God is and what that means for us. The fact that God is holy, the fact that God is just, means that it's a problem that you individually sin against God. You and I personally and individually sin against God. Last Thursday was one of the most exciting nights of my life. Perhaps for you too. Many of you got alerts and notifications. Code red. There was voices on the speaker saying, take shelter now. Take shelter. You will die. And the tornado. Like, tornadoes are dropping out of the sky. Cows are being flung to the next county. Hay bales are being shoved through my yard. And there was just, I saw animals being lifted up out of the yard and just floating in the sky. It was amazing. It was amazing. When I got this alert, I wasn't quite sure what to do because being from California, we don't have tornado warnings. And so we just thought, well, let's just duck and cover. But that didn't make sense because this wasn't an earthquake. Thanks for information too late, Riley. It's now almost a week later, but thank you. It's like when you hit yourself in the kitchen and mom's like, oh, be careful. Like, I already hit myself, mom. Thank you. So we got this alert, right? The alert went to everybody, the alarm.
Take shelter.
Everything, the news, everybody was hearing this thing. And then the devastating consequences of said warning. It was crazy. An EF0 hit Frisco. Literally, that's the number. EF0, it goes up to like EF25 or something. We hit an EF0 in Frisco because of the devastating, terrifying, awful thing called the tornado. But here's the thing. Everybody got the warning, right? It went out to everybody. But it was your job, you individually, you had a responsibility to take shelter, to heed the warning, and to say, I'm gonna do something about this. I had to make a choice whether or not to heed the warning. And because we were at worship practice, we chose to rehearse instead of leaving, because worship's that important. That's the lesson. Each person is responsible to heed that warning. You may not know this. You are actually in Tornado Alley in North Texas. This little part of Texas here, we're in Tornado Alley. You probably don't know that. You probably do that. If you're from Texas, you know that. So it's not a surprise then if you get a warning that says, hey, there's a tornado coming, be careful, it's coming your way, take shelter now. You have the responsibility to say, look, I can do something about this. You're born in a tornado alley, but staying there is also your choice. You're born into sin, but staying there is your choice. But you gotta know, if you stay in tornado alley, in sin alley, you shouldn't be surprised then when sin comes after you and wreaks destruction in your life. And it will do that. Sin unchecked, unbounded, will reap destruction in your life. Rest assured that is the case. It would always be the case. So what do you need to do? You need to do something. You need to admit. You need to admit to God, you are the problem. Hi, it's me. No, it's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. How do you not know that?
Why does everybody look at me?
Because I did this thinking of you, Josh. I'm like, of all people who's going to know this, Josh is going to know. He's going to appreciate this. You call yourself a Swiftie?
Swift enthusiast.
Pastor PJ calls himself a Swiftie. You need to admit. See, point number one is part of this, admitting that you are the problem. Don't blame the tornado. Don't blame your mom and your dad. Don't blame your teacher. Don't blame anything and everyone else. And that's the problem. Most of you guys have the same sin nature I do. And what you're going to do is you're going to say, well, it's because of my sibling. It's Adam's fault. It's Lucas's fault. It's their fault that my sister antagonizes me, or my mom and my dad are too strict, or my teacher is too harsh. All of us have this same problem. We're going to say it's their problem, it's their fault, it's not me, it's not me. But that's not what God says. God says it is you. The reason you react in the ways that you do is not because they made you mad. Your sin was revealed. The fact that you're a sinner is a problem. David says it like this in Isaiah 53. He says, "For I know my transgression, and my sin is ever before me against you, and you only have I sinned, and I've done what is evil in your sight, so that you may be justified in your words and blameless in your judgments. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me." This is the recognition of someone who sees the sin problem is me, God. You're justified. You're right. I'm wrong. This is the testimony of every Christian ever. God, I am the problem. And until you get to this place, you're never going to be right with God. You're always going to have difficulty saying, am I a Christian? Am I truly following God? And I'm going to tell you this. The problem with most of us in being right with God is that we fail to get here. I'm the problem, God. Not the fact that my parents don't give me what I want. Not the fact that I didn't make the team. Not the fact that I don't understand. I'm just the problem, God. I'm the sinner in the room, not you. I need you to admit who you are before God. I need you to recognize that you personally sin against God. You are what's broken in your life. So if we go back to the chasm, here's the issue. Here's the picture, right? The chasm again. God on one side, you on the other. You might notice something different about this chasm. There's a broken bridge there. Do you see that bridge? There's the bridge. Boom. Zooming in for you. Boom. I'm going to do good. I'm going to give money. I'm going to go to church. I'm going to clean out my act. I'm going to do the dishes. I'm going to wash the dog. I'm going to mow the lawn. I'm going to give more money to the church. Here's the problem that all of you guys are going to suffer. If you agree with me and if you understand what the Bible is saying, all have sinned and fall short of God's glory, you might say to yourself, well, then I'm just going to do better, God. I'm going to try harder. And that's a mistake. Why? Because all have sinned. And let's just say it with me, okay? You're going to memorize this verse tonight. Romans 3:23. Ready? Here it goes. 3, 2, 1. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Focus on the words there. Fall short. Fall short. You're not just a sinner by birth and by choice. Even if you were to try your hardest, you're still going to, say it with me, fall short. Because you're not good enough. None of you guys are good enough. 1 John 1:8 tells us here. If we say that we have no sin, you're lying to yourself, and the truth is not in you. It's not in us. Sin, the state of our sin means that we have to confess it. You either confess it and you agree with it, or you're lying to yourself. And the problem, young man and young woman, is that the lie is so powerful and so fun that you'll want to believe it. I'm not that bad. When I look at Naya, man, I'm way better than Naya. When I look at Sean, way better than Sean. And of course, I'm picking on you guys, but you do this all the time. You may not think this, but you feel this. Well, I'm not as bad as that kid. I don't do drugs like that kid. I don't curse at my teachers or my parents like that kid does. You're going to use other people to justify yourself and say, well, I'm better than this person and that person. But the problem is God does not grade you based on how well you compete against the girl next to you or the guy next to you. God grades you against the perfect nature of his word and of himself. The danger is that your response is, well, I'm just going to try to do better than the next guy. I'm going to try to do better, period. But I need you to, point number two, believe that you're not good enough. This is liberating. I need you to believe and to feel you're not good enough. You'll never be good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not well-behaved enough. You're not anything enough. This is a freeing truth, young man, young woman. This is the beautiful part of the religion called Christianity. Christianity acknowledges that there is a gaping hole in your life. You're never going to be good enough for anybody. You're not even good enough for yourself. You ever think about that? When you have your own standards in your life, you can't even live up to your own standards. You fail to do the right thing, even the things that you think are the right thing. And the bar that you set for yourself is typically lower than what God sets. Well, I'm just going to be nice today, and I want to be nice at 70% or 80%. But you can't even do that. You can't live up to your own standards. And why? Because you're not good enough. Everyone around you fights today to say, no, you're good enough, you're strong enough, you're wonderful, you're handsome, you're beautiful, you're tall enough, you're everything enough. And the Bible would say, no, you're not, and that's okay. It's okay to acknowledge that because you're broken, and that's the truth. Imagine with me for a moment. Imagine I held a competitive swim. All the small groups, so everyone against everyone. The competitive swim is from Galveston to Morocco, okay? So we drive down to Galveston, and I'm gonna say, here's the course, guys. You're leaving from Galveston, right off the coast there, and then I want you to swim around the Horn of Florida. Well, that's a horn, but Florida. And then you're gonna swim across the Atlantic, and then you're gonna arrive at Morocco. Okay, that's it, that's the swim. So we have this competition, and I say, you know, guys, hey, I'm feeling super generous. The winner of this competition gets $10 billion from the church. That's what we're gonna do, $10 billion. And so we start saying, all right, well, let's take bets now, because in this really crazy illustration, we do bets. We're taking bets, who's gonna get first place? And probably most of us are gonna say, Bryce Clancy and Angela Trinidad. Tie for first place. Do you guys remember this is one of the Angelo Trinidads I found on Google? Legitimately, this guy's named Angelo Trinidad. Don't know who he is. But we have a friend in common on Insta. I know that. Angelo, how do we know this isn't you though, bro? We don't. Is that you, Allie? So first and second place, obviously, it's going to be somewhere between Angelo and Bryce. And in case you're wondering, how many miles is that, Pastor? The miles, 5,222.01 miles. That's it. Only $10 billion on the line. And you might be asking, well, how many miles can someone actually swim? I did some digging in this. This is actually kind of hard to figure out because the Guinness Book of World Records has different categories and qualifiers. So this is the one that I found that did the most. Like in your mind, think of how many miles could someone swim? This is probably gonna blow your mind. This guy did 3,272 miles over the course of 66 days. That's crazy. That's absurd. Reality is though, this is kind of how salvation works. There's always going to be outliers, people that are really, really good, people that almost make it by themselves, right? The people that are so good, they're better than the rest of us. This guy, Strell, he, 52 years old, swam 3,272 miles over the course of 62 days. That's pretty impressive. And yet, he still failed. If I'm going to have him swim from Galveston to Morocco, he didn't make it. Some people are going to be so much better than the rest of us. I'm thinking, you know, Mother Teresa, MLK, people that people think, oh, really good person. There's always going to be those people. But even those people are not good enough. Because if the distance is 5,200 miles, they're still short. They failed it. Salvation is not grading on a curve. It is a pass or fail. You either win or you don't. So when I say that I want you to believe you're not good enough, I want you to do that by not lowering God's standards to fit yours. This is the first thing. You're going to say, well, I'll just be good enough. Well, I'll go to church more often, and I'll say enough good things to my parents, and I'll stop fighting with my siblings. Not good enough. Stop lowering God's standards. Don't let your mind do that. Because when you do that, then you stop your conscience. Oh, well, I'm better than the next guy. I'm doing better. In fact, the second thing I encourage you not to do is not thinking that God will grade you on a curve. Not thinking, well, if as long as I'm better than the other kids, as long as I do better than 50% of the people, then I'll get a passing grade. God doesn't do that. God doesn't give you a pass just because you're a nice person, and you might be very nice. You might be very successful, earthly speaking. No, I need you to believe that you're not good enough. I need you to agree that you sin against God, believe that you're not good enough, and sit with that. See, believing this isn't a small thing. This isn't a small thing. It's not like saying, oh, guys, I want you to believe that the Rangers is the best baseball team in the MLB. That really has no consequence to your life whatsoever. But the consequence of this is far greater. Let me show you. One more time, Romans 3:23. Ready? 3, 2, 1. For all sin fall short of the glory of God. I was totally quoting Romans 6:23, but good job. You quoted the right one. For all sin fall short of the glory of God. Yes. So let's ask another question here. What is the glory of God? If someone were to ask you, and they're going to put a microphone in your face, and they're going to say, what is the glory of God? You might say,
God's glory.
Good job, Adam. 10 points. Sean, what would you say? Good job. 10 points for you too. No, 9, because that's unoriginal now. What is God's glory? Christians use this all the time. Let me give you a helpful definition. Here's what it means. When we say something about God's glory, we're saying that it's something worthy of praise or exaltation, something brilliant. We're talking about beauty and renown. That renown is the word for fame. It's famous. God's glory is the representation of who he is. And again, the word brilliance there, you think about the radiance of his beauty, his glory. It's worthy of praise or exaltation. This is kind of a hard thing to wrap your mind around. But there are two aspects to God's glory that you need to understand. Okay, you guys ready for this? Think about the word AI. God's glory, AI. We're going to take it backwards. The first one is his intrinsic glory. Okay, the I. AI, intrinsic glory. That is inherent to his nature and his being. This is the fact that he is glorious because he possesses all the glory that there is to own. God is wise. God is beautiful. God is intelligent. Anything that could give God glory, he has in the fullest measure. This is his inherent glory, his intrinsic glory. That's the I. The second one, A. This refers to his ascribed glory, A-I, ascribed and intrinsic. Ascribed glory is what you and I do when we sing to God. We say, God, you're glorious, God, you're holy, God, you're good, God, you're creator. We are confirming what is true about God. We are ascribing to him what is true. And so ascribed glory is the outward expression of what God is on the inside, intrinsically. So when you talk about God in a song, when we sing worship songs together, you're ascribing to God the glory that he is due. This is our way of affirming and confirming what he is and who he is. This is what it means to fall short of God's glory. So we talk about his glory, saying you fall short of God's character. You fall short of all that God is because you're not that. You're not that person. You're not good enough. To go back to our last point. To give God glory does not add to his glory, but confirms and adds to the world's perception of it. So when we say, hey, give God the glory, rise and shine, and give God the glory, glory. Anyone know that song? Rise and shine, give God the glory, glory. You're not adding to God's glory. You're simply affirming it or confirming it, and you're adding to the world's perception. You're demonstrating that he is glorious. So what does it mean then that you fall short of it? Here's essentially what it means. It means that you fail to measure up to his perfect, think the word glorious, standard. God is glorious, he's perfect, and you don't measure up. You're not good enough. Fail. So what then, Pastor Rod? Well, I'm glad you asked. Here's the so what. The so what then? The consequence for not measuring up is, say it with me, death. Death. What kind of death? That's a good question. Romans 6:23 talks about the wages of sin being death. Romans 6:23, you might have heard this one before. The wages of sin is death. There's a second part of that verse that we're not going to get to tonight. But when we talk about death, there's two kinds. There's physical death, which is your body decaying. You might notice that as your parents get older, as your grandparents get older, their body starts to get wrinkly, their hair starts to fall out or turn gray or both. They stop being able to walk well. Their voices get raspy and they can't talk as well. I mean, or sometimes they don't, but you get the idea. Physical decay happens to all of us. And in fact, even though you're born and you're still cresting to the peak of your existence, you're still going to get old, crusty, and you're going to die like the rest of us. You're welcome. That's one part of what it means that the wages of sin is death. But there's a second part here, and this is the part that most of us probably think about. It is the spiritual death. This is eternal misery. God saying you deserve eternal conscious torment because you have violated his rule, violated his law. You don't measure up to his glory. And consequently, point number 3 then, what you ought to expect from God is him to give you hell for your sin. Unless.
The paper says respect.
The paper is wrong.
Good job.
Kelly has too much work on her plate. That's what's happening. Just cross out the R. No, that still doesn't work. Still doesn't work.
Expect.
If you're Hispanic, can you speak Spanglish? Expect God to give you. This is so bad, because this is an important, serious point. This is not funny. This is terrible. Expect God to give you. Okay. Oh. Bad. I'm okay. Imagine you're a parent and you tell your kids, hey kids, don't play in the streets. Why? Because the street is dangerous and there's cars in the street and they drive 100 miles an hour. Don't play, or maybe you guys live off of the tollway. Don't play on the tollway. Sean, don't play on the tollway because you're gonna get hit and you're gonna die. But Sean doesn't listen. And so he's playing soccer on the tollway. He's kicking the ball around until not too long after that, he gets hit by one of the cement trucks that's carrying it over to build more of North Texas. Sean gets obliterated. Mom is terrified. She's beside herself. She sees poor Shawnee boy on the floor of the Dallas Parkway. The ambulance comes, sticks him into the ambulance. She gets in the ambulance to drive him over to a hospital. And Sean's on life support. You know, the typical hospital scene. Beep, you know, with the heartbeat. Beep, beep, that thing. Just imagine Sean there. He's got the oxygen in his nose. He's laying on the thing. And mom says, what are you doing, Shawnee? Why were you playing on the Dallas Parkway? And Shawnee was like, well, it was fun. She says, what I wanted to do is fun. It was the adrenaline rush. Couldn't help it. No matter how much Mrs. Lowe wants to, take away the consequences from poor Shawnee boy, she can't do that. She can't reverse the natural way of things. She has to let whatever happens happen. In the same way, God cannot reverse what is part of his nature, that he upholds justice. He can't just say, oh, look, you're a sinner. I'm just going to wave the forgiveness over you. And I'm going to take away all the consequences that you've ever committed against. I'm going to just make it all okay. I'm just going to be nice to you guys. God doesn't do that. He can't do that. He can't violate his justice. Consequently, when you sin against him and you choose not to obey his leadership, God will allow the consequences to teach you. But you're going to be painful. When I was your age, I was a skater, and one of the things I used to do was go, skate anywhere and everywhere. And one time I was with a friend, and we started spray painting this wall beside the railroad tracks. There's some spray cans there, and I'm like, oh, this is fun. Picked up the spray can, started spray painting the wall. I don't even remember what it was. It wasn't even cool. I was just like, oh, this is fun. Shh. I was such a rebel. I was so cool. In my mind, I knew, like, if I get caught right now, if a cop drives, I'm going to get arrested probably. Probably get, I know, bail, and then I'll be juvenile detention. I don't know. Just things are going to happen. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm just going to do it anyway. I just want to do this. And so I picked up the spray paint. I kept on doing it. And then I got arrested, and then I died. Take a lesson from me. Just kidding. I didn't get arrested. Resurrection. Take a lesson from me. So every now and then, God in his grace may postpone the consequences for your sin and say, I'm going to give you a chance. You know this is a dumb thing, but I'm going to stop it for you. I'm going to stop the consequences. But there's always a line. There's always a line that God has in mind. Where when you cross that line, God says, okay, that's it. Last chance. You had your chance. It's over now. We talk about God's grace and his love being infinite, right? You know, some people might even say, Christians might say, pastors might say, God's love is infinite. God's grace is infinite. There's no end to it. And that's just not true. Not in the way that they typically mean. Because while God does love in large measure, and his love is in many ways boundless, and while his grace is in many ways boundless, that does not mean that you can trifle with God forever and God's going to be like, hey, no big deal. I'm just going to take it on the chin for you because I want the best for you. No, God does have a line for each and every one of you. Every single one of you, God has a line. And that line, at some point, you will cross if you're not right with him. And that crossing of the line, there's no turning back. You've sealed your fate. Do not delay. Don't think to yourself, I've got tomorrow. I've got next year. When I get older, when I get married, when I have my first kid, when I get a dog, when I kick out my cat. There's no, you just don't make excuses for yourself that allows you to postpone what you know is inevitable. I'm willing to bet that for most people in here, you know that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And for whatever reason, you're dragging your heels. I don't understand enough. I haven't figured enough things out. Okay, well, figure those things out. Talk to your leaders. Don't delay. Because while point three is expect God to give you hell for your sin, there is an unless. There is a but God. And I'm going to give your leaders the opportunity to explore some of that with you tonight. There isn't unless. We're going to spend more time on that next week and the week after. if this sermon in any way is resonating with you, I don't want you to take that for granted. I don't want you to think, oh, well, I'll feel this way tomorrow. I'm gonna respond rightly to God the next day. Don't postpone it. Today is a day of salvation. Tonight is a night of salvation, perhaps. Don't delay it. You may not have an opportunity to delay anymore. I want you to be right with God. That's what the sermon series is all about. And if you are right with God, I want you to be sure of that rightness. I want you to be clear and confident of what rightness with God looks like. And what it looks like tonight is to acknowledge that you're a sinner and you desperately need God to save you. The bad news is that you and I are desperately wicked. We are sinners by birth and by choice. We rebel against God. We are not good enough. And if life continues in our rebellion against God, what we ought to expect is hell, which is eternal conscious torment. And I don't want that for you. I don't want that for you. I've been praying for my kids their whole lives that they would not experience that. And I now include you in this. For as long as I have the opportunity to be your pastor, I will be praying that for you guys. I want that for you. Tonight, think about this and do something about it. Let's pray. God, give us the grace tonight to have a great conversation about this topic. Heavy topic as it might be, we want it to be productive. And we want it to honor you. So please let tonight's small groups be a productive and helpful use for your honor and glory. In Jesus' name, amen.